Welcome to episode 3A of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to what's behind the world of comics for the average comic book fan. Join in as Toby Cook, David Price, and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind time after time here on Comic Timing. This week, David Price is off in beautiful Florida catching some sun, so we bring in two of our fellow podcasters for Comic Timing's first crossover. That's right, Sean Whalen and Jim Seguin of the Raging Bullets podcast stop on by to talk some Infinite Crisis, 52, 1 year later, and whatever else popped into our heads along the way. Here now, the host of our show, Toby Cook.
All right, everyone, welcome to a very special episode of Comic Timing. As always, I'm your host, Toby Cook, and I am joined by Ian Levinstein.
Hello.
How's it going, Ian?
Doing pretty well.
And this week, David Price, our Man of a Thousand podcast, is off in Florida having fun. So we are joined by special guests from the Raging Bullets podcast, Sean and Jim. How's it going, guys?
Great, thanks.
Hello.
All right, so this week we're going to do something a little different. With 52 issue or week one coming out this week, we decided it'd be a good idea to bring these guys on, talk about the last part of Infinite Crisis, how DC did so far, a little bit about 1 year later, and discussing the first issue of 52.
A crossover for a crossover.
Exactly, exactly. And if you guys want to check out their podcast, you can go to RagingBullets.com. They're just on episode 7. What do you guys got in episode 7, Jim?
What did we do on episode 7, Jim? We did the 1 year later titles. We did Green Lantern, Green Arrow. We've been basically going through the first issues of all the 1 year later titles. And Jim is a non-comic reader, so the great thing is I'm coming at it as a longtime rabid DC fan, and Jim's been basically coming at these issues as someone who hasn't read them. So we did the Green Lantern 1 year later. We did that, and we also did Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, yeah.
We did the first trade paperback of Ex Machina, which actually I picked up at the CGS 100th episode when I was there with Ian.
Yes, and so, I'm the guy that made you pick it up.
You did, absolutely. So I finally got around to reading that, and we reviewed that on our episode 7.
Wow.
Jim, the reason why we had the big question mark is Jim and I record two episodes at a time. So as far as being able to identify what content was on what episode number, that's a big leap for us. We've got to do counting and what issue numbers we're on and all that, too.
Hey, that's what show notes are for, man.
No. I got show notes here for your show, not mine.
Okay, so let's get into the topic at hand, then. So last week we got the final issue of Infinite Crisis. Let's kind of go around and see what everybody thought. Why don't we start with Sean and Jim? What did you guys think of issue 7?
You want to go first?
Oh, I absolutely loved it. Absolutely, 100% loved the issue. The whole series, even. That was just, to me, I got the way I get my comics, Sean gives them to me, and then I read what's for the podcast and then go out, because I don't actually buy my own. I'm kind of a cheap that way. I'm big time mooch. And I got 1 through 6 in one sitting, and I literally sat down and started reading it and couldn't stop. And then just now, I just read issue 7. And it was just, I absolutely love this thing.
Yeah, he didn't have to go through the pain of waiting a month.
I would have killed somebody.
Well, there were many a fan of comic books that really wanted to kill people waiting for this to come out, and I was definitely one of them.
Especially when there were delays.
Oh yeah.
Well,
very minor, actually.
Right, and I think from the standpoint, if you look back, I loved issue 7. Mm-hmm. The ending really kind of, it took me a little while to figure out what they were trying to do with it, but at the same time, I know what the overall goal of this series was. To bring Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman back to a point of prominence in the DCU.
Yeah, and for me, that's what issue 7. You almost have to look back at issue 1 to understand issue 7. I think if you look at issue 7 on its own, you miss the point.
Yeah.
For me, I enjoyed issue 7 much more through the second read through when I read the whole series again, and then I read issue 7 because it made more sense to me. I liked it both times. I really, really liked it both times. I thought this series has been one. I actually said it on our podcast, and we got an email that this has been the one that's drawn me each week back to the comic shop, like where I'm not just going there to pick up books. I'm rushing there to pick up a specific book.
Yeah.
As a kid, I remember, you know, when there was one X-Men title, for example, when Claremont would write it, you'd rush to the newsstand to grab that one issue of the X-Men title. And this was that same feeling again. I was the kid again that needed to get the next issue of Infinite Crisis. And each issue had a cliffhanger, and issue 7 just was, with one minor exception, issue 7 for me was outstanding.
What was the exception?
Bane. I'm a Batman reader, and I've read you know all the Batman books all along, and they did that whole AJ Lieberman did that whole Bane storyline. I think it was AJ Lieberman, or it might be Scott Beatty. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
It was Scott Beatty.
Was it Scott Beatty? Okay, because AJ Lieberman I think took over that book afterwards, if I'm right. But that's neither here nor there. The Bane storyline, basically, they took the whole storyline where they sort of reformed Bane, and then in Villains United, Bane turned them down in joining the group. Then in issue 7, he was breaking backs. It was like a glaring inconsistency, but it was such a minor, and that's why I said it was one minor exception. It was just one little thing that probably for most people, if you didn't read that storyline, you probably didn't care much, because it actually fit how Bane was introduced into the DC universe. But for me, I was kind of like, oh, why did they do that? Because it was only one panel, and it wasn't really necessary. But like, okay,
Sean, let me before you continue, let me just warn our audience that there will be spoilers, just in advance, just because we are discussing this, and Infinite Crisis number 7 is now almost 2 weeks old. So if you haven't read it, you might not want to listen.
Yeah, I can't believe Mr. Mixelpick was behind all of it, you know? I mean, that was the weirdest reveal.
And we probably should have discussed whether or not we were going to do spoilers before we started talking.
Well, we knew it was going to happen eventually. And you know what? I'll put in the top of the show also, just so that people know. But one thing that I liked about issue number 7 that I definitely need to mention here is that, like you mentioned, Sean, it's almost like going full circle from issue 1 to issue 7. Because in issue 1, you've got the big three on, you know, the what used to be the JLA tower on the moon and the watchtower. And they're broken. You can tell. Like, these are not heroes that, you know, are shining with their, you know, all of their dignity and all of their heroicness actually shining through.
Watchtower was broken, too.
Yes.
Which fits right into where you're going. I'm sorry, but one of the things, I was just listening to what you were saying, and that so fits what you're saying right now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, please. Go ahead.
Quite all right, man. No, definitely. But no, one thing that made the issue for me was near the end of the issue, where they're all there in their human identities, in their secret identities. You see Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman as, you know, Diana, Bruce, and Clark. And you see that they have gone completely full circle. You know, they went from being broken heroes to finding their humanity again, which was exactly what they needed to do in this series.
And realizing that there was more to be done yet before they were ready to come back for a variety of reasons. Each one of them, it was a very personal reason.
Yeah.
Which was...
And
go ahead.
I think, you know, looking at issue 7 and looking at the scene between the last sequence with Alexander Luthor, where he's standing in Gotham City on the corner of the Joker bit.
Absolutely.
That was outstanding.
That was great, yeah.
See, I loved it too. It was perfect. It was perfect.
And you know what it was? It was so important because of the fact that they had the setup of that with the Joker. And if they hadn't, it was one of those things that they almost needed to settle at some point. And I was almost afraid they were going to forget about it.
You know, I was
vanished.
Exactly, and I was glad to see that. I think, wasn't it in issue 4 where the Joker took out the Royal Flush Gang?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Which was also when Chemo got dropped on Bloodhaven.
Whoa! Yeah. When that happened. Oh my God!
Don't ruin your day.
You know, I gotta say, out of everything that happened in the entire series, that was the biggest, pardon my pun, bombshell of the entire series. Yeah.
You know what? I got a question. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Actually, this is something that I was thinking about, because Jim and I haven't discussed this at all. I mean, other than the fact that he liked it. Jim didn't read any of the crossovers, with the exception he read the Teen Titans annual that tied in, and he didn't read the Countdown or anything. You probably don't even know what Bloodhaven is. Do you?
I mean,
in issue four, when they was that issue four they dropped chemo on?
Yeah, it was four. Okay.
When they dropped chemo on that city, did you know what Bloodhaven was or anything?
I just knew it was some city just got vaporized.
What did you think of that? I'm just curious with the fact that, like, I mean, I think, I'm assuming all of us have read the crossovers?
Yes, I have.
Ian, have you read the crossovers? Villains United and all those that have tied in with all this.
Yes,
okay.
I did.
I was just, we were talking about the chemo and how big that was, and I'm just wondering, I guess I've seen on various forums before that one of the issues that people had was that you had to read outside of this to enjoy or understand what was going on with that. Did you have any problem understanding that?
I had no problem. I just figured it was just, you know, some city just got vaporized and they picked that one, saying, okay, I didn't know why they particularly went after that one, but I didn't know if there's any side. I didn't know if there was any side storyline with that or anything like that.
And there was, but it's good to know that you didn't need to know.
I didn't need to know. It just seemed like something evil to do, and the evil guys were doing that, so it, you know, kind of made sense to me.
Yeah, well, you know what? I've always felt that Bloodhaven was like a Gotham City light. You know, like it was almost like the Jersey City to the New York City. You know, like it never really like resonated to me as like one of the major cities of the DC universe until I started getting into Nightwing, and then you know, now you know, with Nightwing changing his location in 1 year later, which we'll get into, I guess Bloodhaven is almost like this is a part of DC's past they want to sort of leave behind, and you know, sort of, you know, go into the whole you know, disaster area, and it's no longer, you know, that second city. It gave it an identity now, which is which it didn't have before.
Well, one of the things, and this, I think this will help Jim out a little bit to understand the importance of Bloodhaven, and why that moment in issue four was so pivotal in Nightwing. And I know, Sean, you've read Nightwing, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So you know that the Bloodhaven's always been kind of a corrupt city. The mayor's always been in the supervillain's pockets. You look back at Blockbuster, Roland Daggett. And that was always the mayor was always a quick buy. So if you look at issue four, and Sean, if you do, you have that there?
Issue four?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Let me.
Okay, can you show Jim pages 1 and 2? So I want him to understand why that is so pivotal to this series.
He's got it.
Okay, and this will kind of help flesh things out for you a little bit, Jim. The three panels that you see on page 2 is basically the cops being under the supervillain's foot. They've all sold out. They all sold out to the society. The society brings in the Brotherhood of Evil. Brotherhood of Evil drops chemo on Bloodhaven to send a message that no city's safe, that the villains are willing to do whatever it takes to get control.
And it was actually a direct message to Nightwing as well.
Right.
Because of, I don't know how far we want to go into it, but because of what he was trying to do at the end of that series.
Yeah.
Right.
That particular storyline, I should say.
I think it's interesting that if you look at the overall progression of Infinite Crisis, Nightwing is probably one of the characters that came out the strongest.
I would definitely agree. Absolutely.
Well, see, what I would like to see is exactly, you know, I'm hoping that we will see a little bit of this in 52, exactly what Nightwing went through, you know, during that time that we didn't really see him before he shows up in New York City and in the continuation 1 year later. Because it's a very different character for me also once he gets into New York. Well, for one thing, I mean, again, this is a spoiler show, so I can mention this. The whole engagement to Barbara. You know, it is completely dropped once you come into this here. It's not really mentioned in Infinite Crisis either. So I'm wondering, like, is it because of what happened in Infinite Crisis that changed Dick, where he would no longer want to get married?
We had an email on our show that actually ties right into this. They were talking about right now And are we going to go into the 1 year later books, or at least
we're going to touch on a couple of them, just simply for the fact that there's specific ones that I've read that I want to touch on.
Okay, so are we going to touch on like Outsiders and Nightwing, because it's basically Nightwing in both.
Right.
The reason why, just because it's relevant to this discussion, we got an email from one of our listeners who basically was saying that he's having a problem right now with the inconsistency between Nightwing and Outsiders, and Nightwing in his own book right now. And I'm hoping that in 52, or at least in his own books, that's resolved.
I'm hoping so too. Yeah. And I can say that having read the three issues of Outsiders that are out right now,
mm-hmm.
I'm having some problems with the way a couple of the characters are being portrayed there. First, I want to know what's up with Metamorpho or Shift. I want to know...
Well, it's Metamorpho. Because I think...
Well, see, that's what I don't understand is... If that's Metamorpho, what happened to Shift?
Well, that's something that is definitely going to be explained in 52. I have a feeling, because it definitely has something to do with something that happened there. I mean, it has to.
I'm a Metamorpho fan, so that's why I'm curious.
Yeah,
because Metamorpho and Kitana are back from the original Outsiders, and Shift is completely, I mean, at least for right now, is vanished. We don't know what's happened to him, so I'm hoping.
But what's weird is if you look at Metamorpho in Outsiders,
mm-hmm.
he's got the same kind of tribal style patterns that Shift had.
Yeah.
Huh.
See, so that's why I'm trying to figure out what the inconsistency is there. If I remember right, didn't Metamorpho go into space?
Yeah.
Shift did. Shift went into space.
Shift was the one that went into space, yeah.
Right, and that's we don't know, as of Infinite Crisis number 7, the whole space thing has not been resolved yet.
Yeah,
that'll be resolved in 52.
Right, and that is where. And actually, I don't mind those mysteries right now, because a lot of the 1 year later books have mysteries that are based on 52, and I actually, if I'm going to be reading 52, I want it to answer some questions for me. I don't want to like find out everything in the 1 year later books,
then
like halfway through 52 go, why am I still reading this?
Yeah.
So,
okay,
Go ahead. Okay. So, I mean, I guess... now, I don't want, like, everything to be a mystery, but there are certain things that, as long as they aren't damaging to the 1 year later storylines, I am glad that we're going to find out during 52. Like, maybe how characters got to a certain point or things like that. And Metamorpho could be an example of that. Because, I mean, a lot of questions there could be... is it in fact the Metamorpho we know still?
Hmm.
You know, is it Shift? Is it Metamorpho? Is it Shift and Metamorpho?
That's what there's actually.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different directions they could go with that. Which I think it's cool that we don't know that right now. Now it would be incredibly frustrating if a year from now we don't know that. I would like to think that we're gonna have an answer to that question at some point. But I can see ways that they can tell stories in Outsiders without that. Because basically the team would already know that, so they don't need to dwell on it within their book. So there's certain mysteries I think that you can leave a mystery to be solved in 52 without it damaging the 1 year later books.
Yeah.
And that could be one of them. I'm not saying it has to be, but that could be one of them where they could leave that to be resolved in 52.
Yeah.
That's a very valid point. But the reason that to me seems like such a glaring inconsistency mm-hmm. is I've been reading Outsiders since issue 1.
Yeah, so that's okay.
So in issue 8, when it was discovered that Shift and Metamorpho were two separate people, that who we thought was Metamorpho wasn't, mm-hmm. he struggled so hard to find his own identity, and then everything with Indigo and all that. It just seemed to me like they're falling back on the old, you know, who's who type deal with who, is it Shift, is it Metamorpho? I just want an answer.
You've made him a throwaway character, which is...
Right, exactly. Which
stinks for character development at that point.
Exactly. So, I mean, looking at 1 year later, I mean, we've got a lot of mysteries here. Why is Captain Boomerang on the Outsiders?
Yeah.
Well, that's right. My biggest question right there. I mean, what could have happened during this year where he would have fallen out with the villains the way that he did? Because, I mean, he seemed to be basically like in with all the Rogues Gallery, and, you know, Captain Cold was basically training him to be, you know, as big a villain as any of them were. So
do we know who his mother is yet?
No.
His mother was,
an identity crisis. They had that tabloid ad going about Captain Boomerang with, wasn't it Golden Glider or something like that? Or Gilded Glider, whatever her name was. But right. It wasn't her. It turned out that it wasn't her when they found out certain powers he has.
They think it was Melanie Thawne.
Okay.
That, which would make sense. That would explain the super speed, at least.
It would, yeah. And by the way, Sean, after I've been thinking about it, about the whole Bane thing that you brought up earlier, if you remember, at the end of issue 6, all the Earths basically collapse upon each other, and you get the quote unquote new Earth.
Right. So that could have revamped him. Thank you.
Exactly.
So that might also explain.
See, that's great.
That might also explain Metamorpho too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because
to me that's a great storytelling where the story is so good that you can take elements from the story to justify almost anything.
Basically.
See, I agree with that too.
Yeah, I do. I think when you're going to do that, if you want to change some things and fix them up, it goes back to their theme of making heroes heroes and villains villains. Because now you've taken Bane and clearly made him a villain again. Because you really, you know, nice people don't break.
Poor Judo Master.
Yeah.
Yeah, poor Judo Master. He got to see that firsthand.
But you know, I'm clear that he's a hero. Because Bane wouldn't do that to a villain. Well, maybe he would.
Now, also, I got to ask, if you'll open up to the splash page near the end with all the heroes in New Earth, which of these heroes in their redesign, because a lot of them did have redesigns, intrigues you the most?
Ooh, that's a good one.
I'm a Batman fan, so I am intrigued on who Batwoman is.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I guess for a while it was speculated that it was going to be Montoya. But I'm looking at the hair color, and I'm questioning if that's in fact who it is.
It could be a wig.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. But I like the fact that puts a little bit more mystery into that.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be disappointed if it was Montoya, but I like the fact that it's blatantly something that could be considered ruining a future storyline by just having her in here. And just by the fact that right now, you know, the different hair color and all that, I don't know who she is, so I'm intrigued. I want to know who that is and what her deal is and why she's running around in a Batman costume. And, you know, especially by the fact that we've basically gotten rid of Batgirl. I don't know what her status. I mean, and there's a question mark on her status right now, but I find that intriguing. Do we have to pick just one?
No. Just out of the ones on here, you know, just which ones? Because obviously there were a lot of changes on this one page, you know, from the
What about Hawkman's?
Well, yeah, Hawkman's supposed to be dead.
Hawkman, isn't he supposed to be dead?
But he looks great, though, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Well.
And that I'm convinced that is Carter Hall, by the way. So, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's not Charlie, whatever his name was.
Yeah.
So, and I think the most interesting one to me is the Marvel family.
I was just going to say that, yeah.
Yeah, because that's
a...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Freddy.
Really?
It looks like
wow.
It, yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
It's Freddie Freeman.
Yeah.
Okay, who's
he's wearing the Shazam colors. He's wearing right. He doesn't have the blue anymore.
Do you see Metamorpho's wearing pants?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which actually, I'll tell you the truth, he does look a bit more like Shift in that picture. And Shift is not listed here. So, you know, that might very well explain it a bit there for us. But one thing also, I'm so happy that after mentioning it in our Queer Eye for the Comic Book Guy, Martian Manhunter is wearing clothes.
Yeah, how about that new look?
I am loving that new look. I really am. You know, finally, no more weird overall thing going for him. He's actually wearing clothing. Yay!
And those 60s boots.
Oh, yeah.
And all that stuff that, you know, were great at the time, but... The flap over boots need to go.
Yeah.
Hey, we get the Creeper too. He's coming back.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of excited about that because it's a character that I think could be interesting in the right hands.
Well, what I want to know is who is the guy in the black there by Stripe?
Ooh, I don't know who that is.
Ooh, well, I'm looking for it right now. Oh yeah.
Down on the bottom, bottom left there.
Oh, that's isn't that Vigilante?
I don't know.
Vigilante from the revamp, from the rewatch that they just did, which by the way I really didn't like much, but the Bruce Jones revamp of Vigilante.
I think you may be right. I'm not sure.
Yeah, because that's what I'm thinking there. But also on the top, next to Supergirl, that's an OMAC.
Yep.
Yes, which there's supposed to be an OMAC series coming.
Okay.
Written by Bruce Jones.
Yeah.
Okay, well, hopefully...
So, kind of after that, whoa!
Well, we got, it looks like Starboy there.
Ooh, yeah. Well,
or Starman or something.
Where are we at?
Right by Wildcat.
Lower left.
Yeah, right by Wildcat.
Right behind between Wildcat and Vixen.
Oh, there you go. Very cool.
Yeah. Well, I do like the fact that there definitely are, like, I like that they didn't hide the redesigns. You know, like this is where we first find these guys, and it actually intrigues us as to, like, whether this is their original look now in New Earth, or whether this is just, you know, how they've turned out now.
Yeah. How about you, Jim? Which of these are you most curious about?
Like, looking over those.
Well, to be honest, most of the ones that you guys have mentioned, I have no idea who the hell you're talking about. Like, oh, down by so-and-so. I'm like, okay, who is that?
If you look at that page, pick one out that you think looks the most interesting to you, that you want to know more about.
Alrighty, let's go.
Any time now, Jim.
Oh, okay. down by Aquaman... Not the silver dude, but the one that looks like purple, has like maybe an hourglass.
That's Hourman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's
he's a member of the JSA.
Yeah. Yes, he is.
Was he in the episode that we?
Issue.
Issue?
No. He hasn't really been prominent yet in the Wonder Waiter of JSA, so.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what's up with Alan Scott. I want to know what happened to his eye.
Yeah, I'm really curious with that, too. Like I said, there's a lot of 52 mysteries that I'm really, really intrigued by.
Especially considering that his eye seems perfectly fine when he's wearing his Green Lantern stuff. So.
Yeah. Admittedly, well, oh, go ahead.
Well, he's got... If you look, it's glowing.
Oh, yeah. Huh, yeah. I wouldn't have noticed that had you not pointed it out, Toby. Thank you.
Yeah. And that's actually consistent with what's been going on in JSA Classified with him.
Yeah, which has been great.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I hate the way Vandal Savage has been written lately. Just he's a hard character to write. I mean, you got an immortal.
I'm hoping this is leading back to a more interesting Vandal Savage, though. Is
God, I hope so.
Yeah, if he's still with us.
Oh, and I don't know if you guys I don't know if you guys noticed, but right next to Batwoman, it seems to be a new Uncle Sam. Which I'm intrigued about, definitely.
I am too.
I can tell you who that is.
Who is it?
If you've read the Battle for Bloodhaven, mm-hmm. The three issues that are out now, which that's one you guys may want to review on your podcast at some point.
We're actually going to. I have actually been keeping that from Jim on purpose because I want him to like read the whole series and then we'll do it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. I'm happy to see the Metal Men there.
Which, I mean, that doesn't mean we can't talk about Uncle Sam now. I just meant that...
Well, sure, yeah.
Right, he does make his appearances to some of the other characters you'll see. Like, you see the guy right up above Stripe, in between Stripe and Black Canary. That's Dollman.
Oh, nice.
Ooh.
That's a new Dollman.
That's pretty cool.
There's a new Black Condor right behind Hawkgirl.
Oh, yeah.
And again, I want to point out that he's by Carter Hall. I'm sorry. Just Hawk Girl without him is missing something for me. So.
I agree. I've read the first two issues of the Hawk Girl 1 year later. Not going to stick with it.
The Chaikin art, actually, it's not even close to his best work.
It really takes – I don't know if it's the inker or what, but it just really just takes me out of the – it completely killed my interest in the storyline.
Yeah. I'm praying and hoping that he'll be back soon.
Yeah.
So
I actually leaked that already.
Yeah. I didn't know if we wanted to touch on it. But
well, this is the oil spoiler episode, so you
okay.
know.
So yes, I'm very happy.
got a couple more issues, but I'm glad that Simonson's writing it because his writing is strong, but I can't get past the art.
Yeah.
The art totally kills it for me.
And you know what the funny part is? Have you been you've been reading the series before this, or did you just jump on with 1 year later?
Okay, I've been reading since issue one.
Yeah, I've liked the art all through it. I mean, with a few, I know they had a couple filler issues that I thought weren't as strong as some of their other issues, but overall, I've been enjoying the art with it.
Yeah.
And it's like 1 year later, it's almost jarring, the differences, which is a shame because I usually like his art.
Well, see, what's funny, you can tell, I mean, with Chaykin, they were just looking for a darker tone, you know, something that would possibly fit more of the atmosphere of the city, you know, after 1 year later, because obviously, you know, devastated by the hurricane. And by the way, yeah, no, that's not New Orleans. No, of course not. But, you know,
yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, they were trying to go for something a bit darker, but in the process, it just looks murky.
Who's the Captain Marvel in the white outfit with the glowing eyes?
That's Billy Batson.
That's got to be Billy, yeah.
Is that what you think? That's Billy? I like that. I really like
that too. I like the hood. It's very very kind of regal, kind of a little bit of mystery there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it actually makes him look more intimidating, and actually separates him more from Superman, which I like.
Well, what I'm thinking is that because he's probably going to be taking the place of the Wizard, that this might very well be, you know, almost like, you know, what he's going to be like in 1 year later. He, you know, the most powerful Marvel. The one basically, you know, like making sure that everybody else, you know, does what they're supposed to do, and you know that the powers remain safe.
It gives it more of a magic look, so to speak, which is that's been his main difference from Superman anyway, is that his powers are more magic based, and I kind of like that. I really do. And again, that's all going to depend on who's writing him and where they're going to go. So
Judd Winnick and Howard Porter are doing Trials of Shazam.
Yeah, that's a 12 issue.
Yeah, it's 12 issues.
12 issue.
That
should be good.
And then someday in our lifetime, we'll see the Jeff Smith one.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I can't wait for that.
You know what? In all honesty, I say that jokingly, and I say it almost like I'm upset that we haven't seen it. And the only reason why I'm upset is because I know it's going to be great, because I just love Jeff Smith. So
yeah.
I think he was born. I just have a question, though, if he's going to write this Shazam, or if it's going to be the one that we had.
I think it'll be out of continuity.
It almost has to be, because he's been working on it for so long. He almost had to have him
like
start
2 years now, yeah.
Lots happened to the guy in that time.
So let's switch gears here, and let's move over to talking about 52.
Okay.
So we got 52 issue one, or I'm sorry, week one, as it says on the cover, for May 10th, 2006. One thing I will say... when I went in my comic shop yesterday to pick up the issue, I was talking with one of the guys in the shop about how DC has marketed this to the retailers. And basically they've given the first 2 months, they've given the retailers a little bit more leeway in their reorders so that they can make sure that they always have enough issues for everybody. They want to get people back in the shops. So that to me, plus the price point. I mean, $250. That's the cheapest comic out there.
Right.
Yeah. You're not going to find, other than Archie Comics, you're not going to find anything cheaper than that.
Yeah.
DC's marketing this. They want people back in the shops every Wednesday. They want people reading. This defeats the whole argument of people saying that companies are writing for the trade.
Yeah.
This is a shining example of that's not the case anymore.
Yeah.
My only gripe about that, and just to come at it from that standpoint, I totally agree. Everything you're saying, I 110% agree with. It's just that I thought the point of what they were doing was to make this universe not only accessible to new readers who read comics currently, but to people who are outside comics. And I don't see a whole lot of marketing this to people outside of comics.
Well, there's been articles in New York Daily News,
Entertainment Weekly,
the New York Times, Entertainment Weekly.
I'm talking about advertisements, though.
They took out a full page ad in Entertainment Weekly.
Did they really? Yep. It was an advertisement.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that then, because that was actually one of my major issues, because, and obviously I don't read Entertainment Weekly, but then again, I'm not the one that they're marketing to in that.
Exactly,
so that's great, because I'm actually encouraged to hear that it's somewhere maybe that they're getting an audience that, like, I'm a comic book audience, so I'm reading comic book magazines overall, so probably one of the reasons why I don't read Entertainment Weekly is just because I don't have time with everything else I'm reading. So actually, what you just said has taken away one of my major issues right now, because I want to see people outside of that. And Entertainment Weekly would be a perfect forum to bring people into comics who have...
Right, well, there's also a niche there because it's owned by Warner Brothers, who also owns DC. So they're a sister publication, essentially. So that's a great marketing blitz. And Entertainment Weekly has always been pretty strong about their comic book coverage. They've always given a little bit of push, you know, to comics that are out there.
What I'd like to see Warner Brothers do, though, that would be a great way to bring people in, is with those Superman trailers.
Oh, yes.
Just for 2 seconds, have a quick blurb saying, and check out 52 in stores now, or check out this Superman
yes.
1 year, you know.
We'll get into that as well, the Superman 1 year later.
How about something like what Marvel did with Civil War and tack on before Superman Returns a 52 trailer?
Sure.
You know, something nice and quick, you know, where they show a couple of screens of a couple of the of pages of art and just say, you know, check out DC Comics if you like Superman, you know.
Read the comics that inspired the movie.
Yeah.
By the end of June, when Superman Returns comes out, we'll be 2 months into 52.
That's true.
So they could literally just show the J.G. Jones covers.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Kind of like a scrolling marquee, and just say, you know, Booster Gold, The Question, Steel, Elongated Man, Rene Montoya.
And provide the first issue free as you walk out of the theater.
Yeah.
Oh,
in a world without the big three, what heroes is going to step up to take the call?
Mm-hmm. Who will you choose? Which side are you on? Oh, sorry. That's the wrong crossover. My mistake.
But you see what I'm getting at.
Right.
There's just so much that you can do as far as promotion on this. But getting back to the content of the issue itself, I reread it today after picking it up yesterday. I liked it. I knew going in that I wasn't going to get everything I wanted out of the issue. Because I knew it was going to be a lot of building, because you had to introduce the characters that were going to be the focal point.
And it's real time.
Yeah.
Right, and it's real time. So you look at the first page, and you've got the what shows looks like all the shards and going towards New Earth.
Tim Drake kissing Starfire.
Yeah,
Tim Drake.
Yes.
Oh my God, that's actually kind of frightening. Whoa. Because
at least I think it was, unless they're somehow.
Hold on, I gotta look at that again. One second here. Let me open up the first page.
Look at the cape.
Oh my God! Yeah. Wow. Unless they changed Robin's original outfit in this new reality, which would not make actually, on second thought, now that I think about it, that would actually sort of make sense, because I mean, Robin's outfit in itself changed. So what if Dick's original outfit changed?
That's a possibility too.
Yeah,
and I'd actually be I would be intrigued either way.
Yeah.
I don't have a huge problem either way with that.
Well, how old is Starfire supposed to be?
Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah. she's alien, so she could be much older.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, she could be at least like 20 years, 30 years older. For all we know, she could age slowly.
Or much younger. Then we got a real mess on our hands.
Right. Jim, you just finished reading 52, right?
Yeah.
What did you think?
Well, I actually kind of liked it. Couple stuff that I didn't know I had actually asked Norge about. I didn't know who Elongated Man was. Because I was like, who's this, you know, who is this guy? And then after he told me that, I reread it again and I saw that he was sitting in the headquarters where it said, you know, home of Elongated Man. So that kind of made sense. I really liked the Montoya bit, because I like the fact that they're bringing in a non-superpowered superhero that's not, you know, one of the big names.
Not superpowered character, you mean?
Right. Yeah. you know, and they're using her, in, you know, in this, in, well, whatever role it's going to be.
Yeah, I like the fact that actually her alcoholism was portrayed pretty accurately.
Yeah.
Because when she was left a note by Dee that said that you don't really, I don't really know you anymore, which would be really how somebody would start viewing somebody with alcoholism. I'm actually intrigued to see where they're going with this character, because she really seems to just have a crisis of faith in pretty much so everything in her life as she knew it.
Right, because if you go back to the end of Gotham Central, I mean, her partner was killed, her girlfriend moved off somewhere else because she didn't feel that things were working out. So Montoya's pretty much at bottom at this point.
And a great new reader's character because of the fact that she was a character in the animated series of Batman. So
right.
You know, people jumping on board for 52 maybe, who are seeing ads that you mentioned, can pick this up, and maybe they aren't going to latch onto some of the other characters, but then Montoya's there. And if you were a fan of the animated series and that was your only comic book attachment, you can access this then.
Yeah.
So.
Right. She was one of my favorite characters in Gotham Central as well. And I'm just glad to see that her, you know, her story goes on past Gotham Central, because if I remember correctly, they were going to continue Gotham Central originally. They were going to relaunch it, and now they've since decided not to. So,
right. Montoya is supposed to be a pretty big focal point of this series too.
Yeah.
So
I'm curious if they took some of the stories that they would have done in this relaunch of Gotham Central and added that into 52. I'd be curious to see.
It's part of the reason why I think Ruka's writing her, because it just feels like a continuation of Gotham Central.
Yeah.
Right, and I think it fits with you know, what DC's trying to accomplish here is, you know, because we don't have Superman, Batman, or Wonder Woman, we need new heroes. We need people who are going to step up and take the ball and, you know, protect the world. You know, when the big three are, you know, not around anymore.
A quick question for you, because I wasn't 100% sure about this. That Black Adam, he's a good guy, right?
Black Adam is his own guy.
Okay, I was a little bit concerned. I'm like, this is a good guy?
When asking the question...
Or is he a former bad guy that kind of turned good, or is he...
Sort of a little bit of both. He was actually the original person to get the powers of Captain Marvel. Back in the years of Egypt, he was the original Captain Marvel, as you were. And his entire area where he lived was destroyed, and in the process he went mad, and
right.
and became he went from being what was his original name? I can't remember it offhand.
Teth Adam.
Yeah. He went from being Teth Adam to Black Adam, and for a while was just a clear cut villain. But since then he's gained extra layers. He was with the JSA for a while. And now he's sort of very much in between as this dictator of his former land.
Well, actually, I'm going to clarify that as a longtime JSA reader. I'm going to clarify a little bit on Black Adam's history, because this will help Jim kind of understand, you know, what his position is right here. Where he is right now, that's Kandak. That's his country. When he was in ancient Egypt, that was basically, you know, where he was born, where he was raised. Back in the JSA, I want to say like mid-60s, early 70s issues of the current JSA run, they had a storyline called Black Reign, which basically Adam brought in a bunch of heroes like Adam Smasher, who was the son of the original Golden, or the nephew of the original Golden Age
nephew,
Adam?
I believe, yeah.
Is that Sean? Does that sound right?
Was he the nephew? I don't know.
He's
if he
definitely
was the
not
nephew.
Son. I know that.
I know he was related.
I thought he was inspired by the Golden Age Adam.
I'm gonna look him up on Wikipedia right now. So.
Yeah.
I thought he was inspired by him. I might be wrong on that. There is a connection.
Right.
On some level, but.
But basically, that the whole thing was, you know,
he's the godson of Al Pratt, the Golden Age Adam.
Oh, there you go. So is he? Yeah.
Okay, because I just thought his questioning style was very effective.
Yes.
But you know what? Here's how great the writing was, though. He really is a gray area character, and you got that.
Oh, yeah.
No, I mean,
You saw that in Infinite Crisis, too.
Yeah.
Right. In Infinite Crisis, though, it was real. At the start of that, he was a villain. Or at least he was allied with the villains.
Yeah.
And then that ended really fast. But
yeah, exactly. So
he became expendable.
Oh, and by the way, not to sidetrack back for a second, but just I meant to ask this while we were still talking about Infinite Crisis. What did you guys think about the last page? I mean, did you think it was necessary to keep Superboy alive, or do you feel it was a bit of a cop out?
Oh no, I liked it. I really liked it. Just as the potential future issue someday, and just it truly just with him, him carving the emblem into his own chest, and just it truly showed just how completely insane this guy is. And if he ever gets out again, he's going to try to destroy the universe again.
I'm just hoping it's not soon.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think it'll be soon. I'm betting probably a couple of years even. Just it'll get to the point where everyone will have forgotten about him, mm-hmm. and he'll get out somehow.
I don't have so much a problem with them keeping him around as much just as long as they don't do what they did with Doomsday, for example, after the death of Superman, how Doomsday kept coming back.
Yeah.
Like afterwards, I don't want to see that again. And I mean, I don't want to go too much into that for anybody, but I'm just saying, I don't want this to be a character that, like, and next week, Superboy Prime. We don't need him back
and
yet.
I barely even want to see him mentioned in 52. I mean, Toby, would you agree with that?
I'm sure there's going to be some mention of him, but I'm okay with that because I know that you've got to reference what happened before. If you're gonna change, what this universe stands for, you've got to reference what happened in Infinite Crisis. People have to be aware that the type of danger that Superboy Prime presented.
Well, and the Superboy statue at the end of 52, and then the fact that they were basically every one of the characters, the main characters in 52, the first issue, were talking about Connor, our Superboy, yeah. His death, and just how important that was. I think Toby's 100% correct. I don't think you can get away without mentioning it. I don't think it's going to be a central focus of this series. I think we're going to hear more about Connor Kent's death than anything else. But I think, like, totally agreeing with Toby, I think they're going to have to mention Superboy Prime because beyond Connor Kent's death, he did so much. And so many things that are, I think the disasters that have been going on that we're seeing, we mentioned Hawkgirl before and things like that, I think some of those things are going to be a direct result.
I don't think they're going to bring him up. I think that was just...
You don't think Superboy Prime?
I don't think they're going to bring up Superboy Prime.
Well, at least not for a while. I mean, like, maybe in passing, they might, like, mention, like what happened during the quote-unquote crisis. But in name, in general, I would actually agree with Jim here. I really don't expect them to really...
Yeah, I don't see people going around saying Superboy Prime. I guess I can see that.
Also, that would just confuse things all over again,
I don't know. It's a tough call, because I can see it both ways.
Yeah. By the way,
But you're right. You're right, though. It really...
Yeah, because the only mention of Superboy is going to be Connor Kent.
Well, at least so far it is, but I don't know what to see.
Yeah, going back to 52, I mean, since this does have to do with Superboy, I was very glad to see that Linda, Wally, and the kids are all right.
That was kind of out of nowhere too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know, almost in passing, oh yeah, crisis is over. Oh yeah, Wally and the kids are fine. Why are you even asking? God,
I like the fact that we don't know if he has powers, though.
Yeah.
It's clear that Bart doesn't. At least right now it appears Bart doesn't, because, Bart's basically broadcast. He doesn't have powers right now. But we don't know Wally's status, and I'm curious to see when and if we're going to find that out.
Well, the new Flash series is coming out next month, so I'm sure we'll find out something.
Yeah. I can't wait, because that's a big mystery, especially with the clues that who starts off as the Flash might not be the or isn't going to be the Flash.
Yeah, well, that's what I was told at the panel over at New York Comic Con, that the exact words were that, the Flash that starts off the issue will not be the Flash that ends it. So, and we've already seen the preview pages of the Flash, at least I saw the preview pages of it on Newsarama, and the Flash that starts it off is the Golden Age Flash.
Absolutely, which looks great.
Right. And we know that Jay Garrick is operating as a Flash in JSA, at least in the current 1 year later arc. So, all right. So since we were talking about Black Adam, I went ahead and pulled up Wikipedia, and we were because Sean had brought up him being part of the society, there's a reason. He wanted to protect Kandak from the society's influence. So he had a legitimate reason for joining them.
Well, and it just furthers that character's got a gray area, that he will go in whichever direction the wind blows that fits his needs and purposes.
He wants to protect his homeland.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Which fits.
Whatever costs, apparently.
Right. Which is exactly, that's his motivations are very, they fit his own motivations and his own needs, as opposed to the good of everyone else.
Well, it's interesting because Black Adam is actually respected by his people too for what he's done.
You know what? He's Dr. Doom, basically. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, he's DC's Dr. Doom.
I can say that's probably the most accurate comparison, but he's better.
Well, yeah.
Just because he's
very godlike.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Even the way he's drawn in 52, when you see him hovering over the city the way he is, or the country, I should say, the way he is. Well, it would probably be his capital city or whatever, but whatever. When he was hovering over there, and then he takes that, he takes the guy up into the air. I mean, it's just, he doesn't act like a hero or a villain. He acts like a god. I mean, basically eliminates the threat with, you know...
Next person's going to think twice about trying.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it really sets him aside from just about everybody else in the DC universe. The way he acts, the way he responds, it's makes him a very unique and interesting character.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, considering the fact that he took out the Psycho Pirate, which that's got to be one of the bloodiest death scenes in Infinite Crisis.
But priceless.
Priceless.
Because you remember it, it just shows that he was not afraid to do what it took.
I have been waiting
to take care of the problem
to him for years too. Because oh my dear God, he is one of the most annoying characters for me. For some reason, I've never really appreciated Psycho Pirate. Even during Crisis afterwards, he was just there all whining like there used to be Earths. Oh God, and, you know, he's in the mental hospital. That dude needed to die. And to do it in that fashion, just, it felt so great.
And he says such nice things about you.
Not anymore.
Okay, so getting back and digging a little bit further, so we've touched on Booster Gold. Briefly.
Well, and there's something I wanted to bring up about Booster Gold also. I read into it that it's Booster Gold's influence that stopped his future from happening. The fact that he's changing history might very well be the reason why the Big Three did not go to the podium.
Well, you know what the other thing is, though, too? You got to remember, Booster Gold came back before the New Earth was formed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading. I mean, I actually can see where you're talking about, but I see another possibility as well, and I don't know which it is. So, I mean, I'm throwing this out there with.
And it also looked like his little buddy, whatever Skeets kind of short circuited
that's what led me even more to think that there was a possibility that this is not it's changed because of the fact that it's the New Earth, because Skeets is like totally. Thrown off by the fact that things are happening differently now.
Alright.
I can see the way, Ian, I can see the way you're going with it too. So that's another one of those 52 question marks right now. I don't know where they're going with that, and I like that actually. Yeah. It's intriguing.
Yeah. Hey, on page 5, that bottom panel, there's some great little Metropolis in jokes there.
Oh yeah. No,
I was just looking at that hot to Dio dogs. I love that. The Fleischer Brothers, reference to the old Fleischer Superman cartoons. And you have Siegel Street and Schuster Road.
That's nice. It's a nice nod.
That's cool.
That is nice, yeah.
Yeah. I thought those were great. And that's right after the Steel sequence, which I really like that conversation between him and the fireman.
Question. How the hell did Steel come back to life in the first place?
He was never dead. This is a New Earth, remember?
Okay, no, that's all right. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's convenient plot.
I know. No, because even wasn't he active during Infinite Crisis though? Like, what wasn't?
Yeah, he was.
So, I mean, because with our worlds of war at war, I could have sworn that dude was dead as a doornail.
Right, but he they had, if I remember right, thinking back, there was something involving some power armor from Apocalypse.
Okay.
Or something that like
right.
that.
In our worlds at war, he came back because of that.
Right. Okay. He inhabited some sentient armor or something during that, but it's making my brain hurt trying to think.
I know, isn't it great that we can say that doesn't exist anymore because it's a new Earth?
Right. He's alive and well on New Earth.
Yes. I like that what he said because it's the New Earth.
Yeah.
It was such a better explanation.
Wait. Does this wipe the Shaquille O'Neal movie from our memories also, or?
Unfortunately, nothing will wipe that from our memories.
You know what? I like that movie. I like Shaq.
Remember I said before that we can turn off his mic at any time. And he's getting dangerously close.
I'm just going to pretend I didn't hear that.
Let me guess, Jim, you're waiting for the 2-disc special edition to come out, too?
Oh.
That and Shazam have a marathon.
It's classic.
Oh, man.
So, okay, so let's see who else we've got here. We've got the confrontation between Steel and his daughter. Mm-hmm. Who I think she's going to be a pretty big player too.
Daughter or niece?
Yeah, I thought it was niece.
Oh, his niece. Yeah. His niece. I'm sorry. Yeah. Natasha.
Did you notice?
She's
good.
Go ahead.
Did you notice that John Henry, just because we're on Steel, that he seems to have really taken upon himself the burden of being, I don't know, I guess I saw him as like taking on the burden again of Superman. Kind of like he did when Superman died and tried to become the conscience of the heroes, and almost to the point where he's going overboard with it. Like, I almost got a Batman pre-One Year Later feel with him, with the way he was handling his niece.
Yeah. Huh.
I mean, just, well, it's not, knowing the character of Steel, it's not very Steel-like, but it fits the 52 story. I'm not saying that it's anything wrong. This is not a criticism. It's more so considering the world and the way it is right now, and that the big three are not a part of it currently, it just felt to me, and I don't know, I'm putting this out there more as a question, did you get this vibe or is it just me? I got a vibe from it that he's really kind of taking the weight of being, I don't know if necessarily even being Superman, or just being kind of a role model or a leader after all that's happened onto his shoulders. I don't know.
Well, it's, at least to me, from that confrontation between him and Natasha, I think what that says to me, she's kind of saying that, you know, she wants to go off and join the Teen Titans because she feels that she deserves it. And his whole point is he doesn't think that she's earned the right to be a Titan, that she hasn't really proven herself as a hero. So what he's saying to her is that if you want to be a hero, you have to earn the right. That, at least that's what I got out of it.
No, that's,
it was a very tough love approach.
Well,
but it makes sense given that this is a new world with new, you know, so much different about it, you know, and having a pickup, you know, without the big three, you know, he wants to show her that, you know, if you're gonna play the role of a hero, you have to earn the right to wear the mark of a hero.
I kind of got that he was, you know, doing more of the grunt and dirty work, you know, that just like with you commented about him sitting down talking to that fireman, you know, the firemen are just, you know, those are your salt of the earth, you know, basic, you know, good guys who they're not superheroes, but they do heroic stuff, and he's kind of doing all the grunt work, the non-flash in a pan, and he saw his niece going after, you know, the flashy, the glory, and, you know, and saying, you know, you're doing this for the wrong reason. You got to do, and you got to get down and dirty and not, you know, look for, you know, the pop and the recognition and, ooh, wow, that's Steel. Yeah.
Like Booster Gold has.
Right, exactly.
And so, like, right. So that almost.
That's what I got from him.
The fact also that she did have an S on her uniform, and we all know how much the S shield means to John Henry Irons and to the Superman legacy. Right. And
well, the fact that he was given the right by Superman to wear that.
Yeah, and I mean, to him, she has not earned that right yet. And I mean, I can certainly understand where she's coming from. I mean, even Supergirl. I mean, well, the Supergirl, you know, that we all know now, had to go through, you know, training in you know, with the Amazons before. Batman and Superman combined, you know, actually felt comfortable with her being a Supergirl on a regular basis, you know, and it's similar here. She still needs to go through, you know, her training process before she can really be a true hero in the minds of Steel.
Right. Okay, so, yeah, I'll agree with that. So we go from Steel to Ralph Dibny.
Nice. I just got one thing about Steel that I thought was a cool moment. It's kind of a little aside on our conversation with Steel. Is that okay?
Sure.
There was a moment that really added some realism to 52 to me with Steel. And it was actually one of the first scenes with Steel where he was bringing down that victim who was saved by a bow from an OMAC. And
right.
Then he asks the question, has anyone seen Green Arrow? Which and he said it in such a way, at least what I got out of it, that with all the devastation, everything that had been going on, and the villains and everything, and the just... When he made it sound like it was just such a worn-out fight and they were all exhausted, genuine concern that any time you heard a hero being mentioned, did they make it out? It was, has anyone seen Green Arrow? Said to me, like, did he make it out? Is he alive still? Which I loved that moment because, to me, it just said, these are real people. And I want to believe that when I'm reading my heroes and I'm reading my comics. I want to believe that these people care about each other and they're comrades and that, you know... If they've gone through something devastating like that, hey, is this person still with us? Because Superboy died. Is Green Arrow still here now?
Yeah.
And I thought that was just a really, really cool... It was one panel, but it kind of struck me as just a cool moment because it just added some realism to these characters. It kind of fleshed them out a little bit.
So, yeah.
I'm sorry, you were going to go on to...
I was going to go on to let's dig a little bit more into the Booster Gold piece because that's by far the biggest thing in this issue.
Okay, well, I mean, to me, just the fact that his character was so different in Infinite Crisis, it bothers me. It actually bothers me that this was back to the immature Booster that we had grown to know over the years, you know, during the McGuire years and during the Giffen years and all of that. And this is almost a regression for him. Now, I'm not sure whether New Earth did this to him or whether this is just Grant Morrison deciding that he likes this way the character is better than the more mature Booster who was on such a mission during Infinite Crisis. But I wanted to see more of that Infinite Crisis Booster.
Yeah, I'm hoping this leads to the... I'm hoping that the fact that this is seeming to blow up in his face, because it starts off with, you know, just Skeets, like, basically doing the PR work for Booster. Even though Booster's too modest, I'll be happy to tell y'all how great he is. And then, you know, he seems to be using inside tips from the future to build a popularity for himself. You know, the break for the soda pop-op and finding, what was it? Who was the villain that he grabbed?
Was that Mammoth?
Mammoth, absolutely. Thank you.
From the Brotherhood of Evil.
Absolutely. It was one of those mind freezes. But when he you know, knew where Mammoth was going to be at that point in time, it was like so blatantly a photo opportunity for himself that I'm hoping that this, like, especially with the end of this issue, with everything blowing up, I'm hoping that'll lead to the mature Booster that you're mentioning, in the sense that he'll see that this plan wasn't such a good idea after all, and maybe he has to actually earn his stripes. And hopefully we'll see that character. I'm with you. I think it's a glaring inconsistency from the character that came back. Because when he first popped in Infinite Crisis and they went looking for Blue Beetle, it was like you said, he just seemed like this very mature, all-business Booster Gold who was there to save the day. And now he's flashback to being immature, and I'm hoping we'll get that character back again because I wanted to read him.
His best friend just died, for God's sakes, you know? I mean, for him to be all happy-go-lucky all over again really doesn't make much sense.
Unless he's another victim of the New Earth.
That's it. Everything's a New Earth. Everything's a New Earth.
Yeah. I think I'll agree with that. That was probably my biggest problem with this issue, was just it was such a chain in the status quo for Booster that it didn't jive with what we'd seen in Infinite Crisis. I mean, it really didn't. I mean, we had a completely different look. I mean, where did he get the time to come up with the promotions? I mean, there was no setup. I mean, we just literally just jumped right in the first week with him already having endorsements and everything.
And this is supposed to take place almost immediately following Infinite Crisis, am I right?
Yeah, it's like the day after. Yeah.
Okay, which is, that's why I'm kind of...
week one, day one.
It's really jarring of that. It was like he came back planning for this. And that's the only thing that could fix that for me. Where they go with it from here, they've got to almost show somehow that he came back knowing how this was all going to end and planning this. Not that I'm saying that I want him to stay this way, but it is such a drastic change. I want to know how this all happened. I'm sorry, go ahead. What were you going to say? Because maybe you're...
I was going to say, or if you look at the DC Nation page, the cover for next week, or for this upcoming issue, has Booster Gold on the cover. So I have a feeling we're going to get more in depth into what that means.
And Clark Kent in the background also.
Right.
You know, I'm really hoping a lot of the things that you brought up that are questions, because actually you just talking to you about it and hearing, talking to both of you about it and actually hearing your concerns about it, it's actually made me question it even further. And I'm hoping we get some more out of this, because this all, since Infinite Crisis number one, has been so tight. I mean, there's been a few things here and there that I've had, and they were very minor things, though. This seems to me to be a glaring inconsistency.
Yeah. Right, but I'm thinking that that there's a reason why that's there, mm-hmm. and it's that there's a mystery. That's to me what 52 is. 52 is a mystery.
And
it's a serialized mystery, because we've got a gap with 1 year later.
And I say that it's an inconsistency that bothers me now, but it's an inconsistency where they could make it very cool and it won't bother me anymore. They've got 51 weeks to do that. So.
Exactly. I was actually just going to say that. You read my mind.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, looking at what little bits we got for Ralph Dibny, and, you know, the little bit with the question near the end there, which I love the question signal. That was a great little moment. And I'm sure you, Sean, as a longtime Batman reader, got a real chuckle out of that.
And you know,
where he pulls
I've got every question comic since DC's had them, I should say. I don't have the originals.
The old quality or Charlton.
I'd love to just read those just to see what that was like. But I was a big fan of the Denny O'Neil series. And to see that character back again, so blatantly pointing that at my... At least I thought it was blatantly... Did you guys get that it was blatantly pointed at Montoya?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I love that.
Okay, so that's an actual existing character from the past?
The question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Did you watch the Justice League Unlimited cartoon at all?
Yeah.
He's been on the Justice... You probably didn't see any of the episodes.
I didn't see any of the episodes.
Yeah, because they actually handled him pretty well
in
that cartoon.
Actually, on JLU, which actually worked really well. And I'm thinking that...
voiced by Jeffrey Combs.
Yes.
Yeah, which was great. It was great.
I loved the whole conspiracy nut take on that. It was just priceless. Yeah. It was just the way that character was written. He just... By far, one of the strongest characters out of that series.
I think so too, and it's actually been one of the great things about this season has been that they've spotlighted some unique characters.
Vigilante.
Yeah,
I love Vigilante.
You know what? Yeah, it was great.
If you think about it, JLU has managed to almost be somewhat similar to the crossover that has been going on in DC in the past two seasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the Legion of Doom forming and all that, it's very similar to the Secret Society with the whole Infinite Crisis thing, and the season before that with the whole questioning as to whether the heroes have gone too far was actually pretty close to, you know, what was going on in Identity Crisis. So
right, because you had the whole thing with with Project Cadmus and all that.
Yeah, which is actually something that might have very well, you know, led to maybe people who just watched the cartoon to picking up some of these comic books.
Right. And why didn't they have an ad for the comics after every cartoon?
I would have loved it.
I really wish they would start doing that.
Yeah, just because it's their cartoon. And I understand that they're different studios, and I'm not ignorant to that. It's more so, though, when they have these licensing deals, you can't tell me that if somebody wants to use your property, you can't say, just give us 5 seconds at the end of your cartoon and throw on this information.
Yeah.
You know, and you can even do it while the credits are rolling. So you don't even have to, you know, as like a little window when the credits are rolling or something, just some nod to the product that inspired the series, because especially JLU, it's so close to the tone of the comic books that you've got a legion of fans there that could come over to this very quickly. Who've never read a comic book before.
And I'm sure maybe haven't
in a long time. And it'd be so great, especially with what they're doing right now, to bring people into this.
Well, let me throw this question to Jim then. Jim, if you had been watching JLU and you saw like an ad for, say, a Superman comic, would that give you a bit of curiosity and maybe want to go to a comic shop and check it out?
Probably not.
No?
That's actually good.
Yeah, no,
That's actually good.
One of the things, like, we've had a couple, Sean and I have had a couple of discussions where, you know, I would say, you know, after reading, with some of the Titans stuff, I was able to understand some of the Titans from watching the Titan cartoon, and there was the one Justice League that had the Hawk that brought back Hawkman, and which Hawkman's my favorite character.
I heard you guys talking about Shadow War. It's still a sore point.
A running commentary on.
Oh, that was my favorite episode.
But seriously,
I'll never forget him.
Yeah, I know. But with the Justice League cartoon that had the Hawkman in there, you know, Sean was telling me how similar that was actually with the in the actual comic book. So yes, it could, but you know, without knowing that how similar and how close they are to each other, it wouldn't bring in new comic book readers.
So basically throw what I just said out the window then.
Pretty much.
Well,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, sorry.
Thanks, Jim.
Hey, no problem.
That episode was written by Geoff Johns.
Yes.
Which is great because he revamped Hawkman. I noticed that right at the beginning.
Yeah, he made Hawkman cool again.
Definitely. And then, did he ever?
He's done that for so many characters over the years too. Come on, who other than Geoff Johns would have had the balls to bring back the original Red Tornado? You know, Ma. You know,
Uncle, yeah.
I mean, that was that was so great. And you know what? She's the mother hen of the group. It works so wonderful in JSA. And
adds that dynamic.
Adds that dynamic. And nobody else would have thought of that other than Geoff Johns, because he is the type of individual who, you know, used to read this when he was a kid. And that's what I love. You know, a lot of the stories that he's doing, he probably had in his head about 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I mean, I think the thing about the, as far as crossover goes, I think one of the reasons they don't do that is they kind of want to keep those audiences separate. I am too. But at the same time, they do have tie-in comics. So I think it makes sense. I don't understand.
But you're talking about like the Johnny DC stuff, which I don't mind. Then advertise that.
Yeah.
Let me throw it to you this way. If you saw at the end of the JL, Jim, I'm going to ask you the same question, but we're going to go a different route. If at the end of the JLU cartoon you saw an ad for a JLU comic book,
yes,
how inclined would you be to pick that up?
That I would be more inclined to pick up, because I actually enjoyed watching the cartoon.
Yeah, that's what they should
be doing. Follow up with additional stories within that same within the same cartoon universe, I would be willing to pick those up.
See,
that would be a pull in. and then you can go from that. But then you're dealing again with two different universes.
You know, right. I'm sure that there are a lot of comic book guys. Well, at least maybe not a lot, but there are definitely some comic book guys who really didn't have much experience with the question. Who, you know, found him in JLU and are now reading 52 and are like, oh, wow, hey, the question's in this. That's awesome. I remember him from JLU. And you know what? Most of my experience with the question was either with Rorschach from The Watchmen. Oh, come on. We all know.
Did you ever read Watchmen?
No.
Okay. I'm sorry.
That's fine. But
as for your show at some point,
yeah, definitely.
Then.
Oh, that's what do you think I was thinking? I'd love to read it again.
There was a Question miniseries that came out somewhat recently that I picked up with him going back to Metropolis and in his reporter alter ego, and that I really enjoyed a lot. And it was sort of more of that, you know, conspiracy theory type question that I had watched in JLU, and now that I'm seeing him in 52. I'm happy to see that this is a character that I can learn more about now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's going to be a neat part of that. Are we done with the question, or are we going back to him? Did anybody else have any points? I don't want to cut anybody off. That's what I'm trying to say.
No, I think we can move on.
Due to the length of this in-depth discussion of Infinite Crisis 52 and 1 year later, we decided to break this episode up into two. So we'll end episode 3A right here, and you'll be able to find 3B with the rest of our discussion with Sean and Jim on Friday for episode 3B. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. You can send your questions, comments, or audio comments over to the email address. Once again, we are listed on iTunes under Comic Timing. So if you'd like to do any reviews for Comic Timing, we would greatly appreciate that. We'd also greatly appreciate any votes you can give us over at Podcast Alley. A link to Podcast Alley is at the main page over at speakgeekspeak.com/comic timing. Also, we have ourselves the forums over at speakgeekspeak.com/forums. So if you want to send any questions or comments over that way, you can do so as well. Once again, I want to thank both Jim and Sean of the Raging Bullets podcast over at www.ragingbullets.com for joining us. They are also on iTunes and Podcast Alley, so if you want to give them your votes and reviews, you can do so, and you can send them an email over at ragingbullets@gmail.com if you want to thank them or anything along those lines for being on this episode. For Toby, I'm Ian Levenstein, reminding you once again that there's always time for comics. Take care, everybody. We'll see you on Friday.